I like a good table stab every once in a while. Welcome to New Game Plus. You are listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
My name is Nolan.
And this is episode 198, which is two away from 200.
Uncomfortably close.
I can't wait.
We are very close to celebrating our fourth anniversary as a podcast.
Weird.
It's crazy.
We've got some exciting things planned for that, so we'll share with you in the coming days. Stay tuned. But today, we've got a treat for you. So pre-episode 200, we are celebrating early by having a guest joining us on the show today. We have with us a blogger that focuses primarily on three things. One, being a dad. Two, being a gamer. And three, being a gamer that's a dad. And he is also occasionally a streamer, and he's an all-around family man. On top of that, he's a friend of the show. Will you join me in welcoming Gareth, or 16-Bit Dad, to the show here today?
Woo!
Hello.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Hi.
Yes, absolutely. Dude, we are so glad to have you here. You've listened to the show. You know who we are. You've conversed with us in Discord, on Twitter, on all the socials. Would you please just take a moment and introduce yourself to our viewers, to our listeners that may not know you?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Gareth, or 16-Bit Dad. I have been a blogger for about nearly 3 years. Primarily focused on retro games. I'm collecting at the moment for the PS1 and PS2 as well. Random little fact, I have the Famicom Disk System version of Zelda, which is really hard to find. So that's probably the most rarest thing I have in my collection.
Sweet.
I was actually going to ask you what you're most proud of, but and so it'd be that.
That, and probably also I have, have you heard of Lunar Silver Star?
I have not.
Yes, I have.
I have the fan art collector's edition version of that, which is in the UK worth about £1,000.
Whoa.
Nice.
Sweet. Could I borrow it? No, that's amazing. We really are glad to have you on the show today. You have listened. I don't know. Do you know what is the first episode of New Game Plus that came across your ears?
I think it was probably Legend of Dragoon.
Okay, good. I've seen you stream some of that before, so are you... You actually and me, I think we have some crossover in some of our, like, genre love and Final Fantasy love.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I own... If talking Final Fantasy, I own every single... I have one copy of every single game that was released in the series.
Dustin's jealous.
Yeah, I mean, I do too, whatever.
No, but, you don't.
No, that's right. Trying to one-up me, whatever. But welcome to the show. We have a few rapid-fire questions up front. They are largely unrelated. The goal for this is to not think too long on any particular question, but to answer from the gut, from the heart. The first thing that comes to your mind...
What, is it the gut or the heart? Because that's going to give really different results.
Yes.
Okay, take your pick. Okay.
I'm not asking you the question, so it doesn't necessarily matter, Kenny.
I'm just saying, like,
Gareth, are you down for the challenge?
Sounds good to me.
All right, we'll start with favorites. What is your favorite city in the UK?
Nottingham.
What is your favorite city in the US?
San Diego.
What is your favorite genre of music?
Heavy metal.
Favorite BBC original?
Doctor Who.
First of all, you have not seen these questions and you're nailing every,
I know,
just going like bam, bam, bam.
Truly rapid fire.
I love it. Favorite book?
Ooh, Hobbit.
Favorite video game console?
PS2.
And then you know I'm going to ask favorite Final Fantasy?
Tactics.
Wild all card. Right.
Couple of random questions here. Do you have Netflix?
I do.
Is it your account or is it someone else's?
Mine.
All right. Disney live action remakes, yes or no?
No.
Star Wars or Star Trek?
Can I say both?
Sure. Have you ever worn socks with sandals?
Yes, I'm a dad.
Are you currently wearing socks with sandals?
No.
Would you want to live forever?
No.
Okay. Sneezing, do you like it?
What?
Never thought about it.
Oh, well, am I the only one?
Question. No, I like sneezing.
Yeah. Oh, dude, I love it. What Harry Potter house are you in?
Slytherin.
And what do you get when you cross a gypsy witch with an adventurous thief and a pretentious bishop?
My all-time favorite game.
Join us as we talk about the retro game of the week. Can you pronounce it?
Kudelka.
Overview.
Kudelka is a role-playing game released for the PlayStation that dropped pre-Y2K, or around there, actually, right at year 2000 here in NA, 1999 in Japan. It was developed by Sacnoth, which, if you haven't heard of the company, it's probably not surprising. We'll talk a little bit about the story of the founding of this company and who wrote and directed this game, because that's kind of interesting, but let's talk the game itself. Not just a role-playing game, but specifically a kind of horror-themed role-playing game. And it's set in Wales in a haunted monastery that, as you jump into the game, you quickly find has a little bit of nefarious backstory. And you jump straight into the story playing the titular character Kudelka, who quickly meets Edward Plunkett and saves his life. There's monsters, and from there the story just gets a little bit crazier. It was written and directed by Hiroki Kikuta. I'm going to say that incorrectly.
I think it's Kudelka. Yeah,
written by Mrs. Kudelka herself. No, Hiroki Kikuta. And if you feel like that name's familiar, it's because it has come up on the show before. In fact, we've talked about some of the work that this guy's done, not in making games, but in scoring them. And some of the favorite games, favorite's probably fair, some of the games we've played that have been some of our all-time favorites have his name on their score. Seiken Densetsu 3. He also worked on Secret of Mana and a number of other games that Square released. And Kudelka is his sort of pet project. He says, this composing thing is cool, but I want to do a little bit more and actually develop my own game. And so Square started Sacnoth, and this was their first title.
And from what I gather, he also worked with some other Square people that he convinced to leave, and they were like, we're going to make our own game. That's happened a lot, I think, in the gaming industry. And SNK is the publisher, and I'm familiar with SNK from SNK versus Capcom, the fighting games.
Yeah, I was about to say, they do some fighting games, don't they?
They do, yeah. So I was kind of pleasantly surprised to see that name on here. You don't see that company publishing much outside of those games, so that's pretty cool.
Gareth, there are a lot of video games. There are a lot of video games that are on the PlayStation, but you chose this game. Why?
So I've always been a fan of kind of the more weird and wonderful and a little bit out there sort of games. And I like experimentation with video game development, and this game is that through and through. Part of that comes from the kind of storied development problems that they have, but it ended up being one of the most unique games I've ever played. I mean, I've not found another survival horror tactical RPG out there at all. So that uniqueness drew me in. And then from there, I fell in love with the characters, the story, everything just clicked with me perfectly.
How often do you revisit this one?
Probably once a year.
Really? Okay, so it's a yearly thing for you. I asked because I was wondering if you played it that often, because I think we all have like a yearly game or a book or something.
But for me, it's a game that came to me at a... It's a good game, but it's Final Fantasy VII. It came to me at a certain time in life, too. And so, like, I play that game regularly. Did Koudelka come to you early on in your gaming career? I mean, not too early on. It's 1999. But did it... what is your story with this game? Or is it just, I don't know, 5 years ago you found a slightly off, weird title and then you fell in love with it?
So I've been playing RPGs. I think I started with them with Final Fantasy VI, and I've been playing them constantly since then. It's my favorite genre by far.
Absolutely.
But then my second favorite genre is survival horror from the Resident Evil starting mm-hmm. and from okay. there. So when I then found that there is this one game that tries to mix both of my favorite genres, and I'd already started growing tired with the kind of base mechanics of all of them, I thought, I've got to try this. I've got to see what it is. And yeah, it was perfect.
Now, this is a game that spawned a series. In fact, I saw that you were streaming, I don't know, a night or two ago, a game called Shadow Hearts. And was the game called Shadow Hearts? I believe it's the series and the game. Is that correct?
Yeah, the first game is called Shadow Hearts. And then from there on, it's always Shadow Hearts and then a subtitle.
And that is Koudelka is the start of that series?
Yeah, that's correct. In fact, it's a little bit of a disconnect, but there is a direct connection between the two.
Oh, that's makes cool. sense. I didn't realize that.
Gameplay.
So kombucha combines
no,
major gameplay elements, and Gareth, you pointed it out there in overview, and I think that's a good place to start in describing the gameplay of this game. You've got the Resident Evil series.
Yes.
You've got Final Fantasy.
Yes.
Well, and this game is both.
Yeah,
I mean,
some
like definitely influenced. In fact, you know this person, I think, Gareth, but Hiroki has said that this game was meant to be more of like a Resident Evil type of game until they decided, not last minute, but along the way, to add a lot of RPG elements that they were familiar with from Square. So I thought it was really cool to see a combination of two major genres. They're not really related at all.
Yeah, no. So Hiroki Kakuza, he basically, yeah, he wanted a purely horror RPG, and to kind of distance himself from the general RPG tropes, for lack of a better word. But then the rest of the team, they didn't like that and they wanted to do more of a generic RPG, and that's how you ended up getting such a strong elements from both of them rather than it leaning towards one rather than the other.
I'll tell you, from the opening cutscene, I thought we might be getting a cross between Resident Evil and Dark Souls. I'll tell you why. You're a girl that's coming into this like monastery, like haunted monastery in Wells somewhere. And I just, what I have seen of Dark Souls is this, like, I thought, it kind of in the sense that like it's this one location that new areas of it open. I know it's not the same, but that's what I saw. And then I was thrown into a turn-based battle. And that just, yeah. I didn't know anything about this game coming into it, Gareth. I don't think any of us three did. And so I'm thinking even Resident Evil, getting those vibes, and you still get those. We've referenced it a few times. We'll reference it a few more before the end of this episode. But when I was thrown into a turn-based, grid-based battle, I was completely thrown off.
I got a little Fire Emblem out of that. I'm not going to lie. The tactical part where it pulls up the tiles that you can move. So the battle system is grid-based. Instead of being stationary, turn-based, or being like free-moving battles, it's like turn-based, but then when you can move on a grid. So that's like, that's combining a lot for me. I was a little overwhelmed, and I'm still kind of confused at what the game is trying to be. So I'm hoping that, Gareth, you can help me understand what it is, or if it's just a combination of everything.
To be honest, it is really just a combination of everything. It, to go into a bit of history of the game, it boils down to the fact that there was this disconnect between Hiroki Kakuta and his team, and they both wanted to make basically different kinds of games, which is never a great way of developing a game, to be fair.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
So then that meant that they took all these different inspirations and threw them together. So when I say it's like Final Fantasy, I'm talking it's more like Final Fantasy Tactics, or it's more like, as you say, Fire Emblem, and taking that kind of JRPG and throwing it into Resident Evil.
It is a great way to end up with a unique game title, however, because I don't think that there's any other game to my knowledge, quite like this. And, you know, you can say that's a good thing, a bad thing, on purpose or not, but it definitely makes this feel really interesting.
Yeah, I've been searching for other games like this. There are a few other horror RPGs, but not in the same way as this. This is one of a kind.
I just remembered that our last guest episode was Resident Evil. So it's interesting that at least two of our listeners and two of our most recent guests have this kind of affection. This game, more than any we played, including Resident Evil, has the most deformed and deranged monsters that I've seen in video games, that them in and of themselves are terrifying.
Yes. Like super twisted designs off the like from the start too, with little explanation. And I mean, I'm all for that. But then you also have some enemies that are table and chairs. And I lost my mind when Edward Plunkett goes up and punches a table. That was ridiculous. That's more ridiculous than the name, than the combination of genres. That was the funniest moment for me this week, was punching a table.
I mean, what else are you going to do if a bunch of objects in this room in a haunted monastery start moving and attacking you? You got to fight back.
You're going to pull out one of your, like, 3,000 weapon drops that come about in this game, and it's somewhat randomized. So you might have like this battle axe at the beginning of the game, or you might have, I mean, you get a pistol early on, so there is ranged, but then you've got, like I said, yeah, you've got a crowbar or a battle axe or like a sword, or there's so many different kind of weapons and types of those weapons that come about. So you can punch tables, but you can also shoot or stab tables too.
I like a good table stab every once in a while.
While we're talking weapons as well, I think it's worth mentioning that one another thing I love about this game is that every time you play it, you'll have a slightly different experience, because the weapons, they have attributes, so light, dark, different elemental attributes, and those are randomized. So every time you play it, the weapon will work differently on different enemies.
Oh, that's super cool. I didn't realize that.
Oh, well, they also have the attribute of break, and so that's annoying. The durability is what they have, and I get it, and I know games do it, and whatever, and I hate it.
I mean, dealing with a break mechanic, or like a having to repair weapon mechanic, is frustrating, but I am used to that in some of the games that I like, and If the game is going to have that mechanic, it needs to balance it out in some way by making the weapon strong enough that that you're not spamming it, and that you're questioning, should I use it right now or should I save it for like a boss or something? And I'm not sure if that was here. But I also don't know, because I hoard weapons. Like I don't like
you
to
just
waste.
Refuse to use them.
Yeah, yeah. I thought I might need them, so I was just punching stuff and using magic.
I've come to actually, I used to really hate the idea of breaking items. I've come to actually really like it as a mechanic. I think it just adds a little bit more choice. It can be frustrating when a weapon you really like is no more, but if so, you should have saved it. And so I don't know that in this game it's real clear that that happens until it happens to you, and that can be a little bit frustrating, but I like the choices that you have to make.
I think it also, the fact that they break, it adds to the whole survival horror element of the game, because you've really got to be careful with what you're doing. And there are some weapons that are really, really powerful, to the point where they'll kill most things in 2-3 hits, like most of the big bosses. But then their durability is really low, so you want to save them for basically end game.
Yeah, it's like being starved for bullets in Resident Evil is kind of what it reminds me of. Yeah, which is great. I love the accuracy of that. That's great.
And then we've mentioned it, but you've also got your whole magic system that sets it apart from Resident Evil, if nothing else does. And each character, I believe, has access to the same pool of magic abilities, but depending on how you place your stats, depends on, of course, the strength that your damage is going to do in that magic. And so you've got these three characters, I think pretty much throughout the majority of the game, the story, and you want to build them in different ways. I don't know what you guys did. I had two magic users. Kudelka was my more offensive magic, and the bishop was my more healing magic, but he did offensive magic as well. And then Edward was more of my like brute, try to soak up damage, try to deal damage with his, Morning Star or whatever weapon he had.
His knuckles. Did you follow a guide this week to get that build?
You know the answer to that question.
Okay, so then I guess we may have found a similar one, because that was kind of the build I was going for too. Edward was like tanking hard. And a point on the whole stat allocation thing, like that, I think, Gareth, that also adds to that replayability you were talking about, because I didn't realize the random drop thing and the stats or the attributes were randomized. That's really cool. But there's straight up a stat allocation system in this game via like, or similar to what Diablo, like Diablo 2. And that's so awesome because it gives you so much freedom to change up builds. Even though you have the three characters there, it's like, I don't know, I could tank with the bishop next run and then make Edward a magic user. I don't know.
For people who didn't play it, here's how it works. You level up and like you're getting experience, and not only does your character level up, but you're given a set of points to assign towards like individualized stats. So you have strength and dexterity and vitality and intellect and mind and all of these different things, and you get to place those specifically in each character as you see fit.
What's your favorite build to run for your team, Gareth?
So I've always tried different ones, but I think my favorite one was actually from the last time I played through it. I basically asked the people that were watching how we should do it, and we all agreed that we'd do it based on the MMO kind of three person party. So we had Edward as a tank, and then we had James as a physical DPS rather than a magic DPS, and then all damage and healing was done by Kudelka
in the back, like from a distance. Yeah, nice.
Gareth, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that I discovered this week something that I actually haven't found in, I don't know about any other RPG or tactical RPG, but I believe that range came into effect with magic as well.
It does, yeah.
If you're closer to the enemy and you cast your flare, they're going to do more damage than if you're on the other side of the area.
That's correct, but it also depends on which spell as well. So flare, is best if you're close. Then there's megalith. That's actually better if you're further away, and that's actually really overpowered if you're further away.
Interesting.
Yeah, because then you're just safe.
I also got the sense that like AOE damage could be mitigated by spreading your party out. That there were some line of sight issues. There were all kinds of really dynamic things about the layout of this grid-based system. Characters could be knocked back. You could attack, sort of what's directly in front of you, but at an angle. And I don't know. I feel like what we've said so far makes it seem fairly simplistic, but even with one pool of magic, because you have the ability to build your character so many different ways and a fairly decent-sized grid, it's not huge, but you really have a lot of options as to how you go about playing this game.
I'm all about that grid. I thought it was one of the most unique parts to this game and how it affected the battle system, because effectively it's a game of who can control more ground, because the enemy's advancing towards you and there's only a limited amount of space. And so like you have to hold your ground with your tank if you want to, reserve that space and that range for your magic users. And I love all of that. And I love the decisions and that you can move. However, it made for painfully slow gameplay and battles. It was really tough for me to progress through this week, because I was watching my characters walk half the time and then the enemy walk a little bit. It was pretty rough.
I was gonna say, it also it makes the game a lot more difficult, because I don't know if you know, but you actually can't go past the enemy either. So if they come forward, you are stuck.
Yeah, I definitely recognize that, because I was trying to get behind, you can't go behind the closest enemy. And so sometimes they would stagger themselves and there would be someone that, I don't know, or six tiles up and someone's back in the corner, but I can't get over to him. I think that's how it is. And so that was another area of difficulty. We've been talking about the battle mechanics here, and that is a big part of this game. You've got random battles, boss battles, battles. But I think a lot of this game, like the Resident Evil games, is this game is not all about the fighting. It's about the navigating around this area that you're unfamiliar with and the story that's unfolding mm-hmm. while you're there.
And even the location that you're set in. Like, I know it's PlayStation 1 and graphics aren't mind-blowing, and there's only so much you can do with these, like, you know, pre-rendered sort of static camera 2D backgrounds, but they put a lot of time into making it, I don't know, into having different camera angles as you move into different rooms and to having really unique look to each of these rooms, where even if you're just in this one building, which feels kind of limited, but it's probably really just like a resource question, but as you move room to room, you feel like each room is unique and has a totally different look and feel. And I don't know, I felt like they did a pretty good job with what they had to work with and keeping it all indoors.
I'm glad you mentioned the story parts, Dustin, because there were a ton of cutscenes in this game, but it was the kind of cutscene that was like very full of story, and it's embedded into the gameplay. It's intentional. It's not like you play a ton and then you get one cutscene every hour or two. It's like a lot of exploration, which I'm a fan of, and I love the puzzle aspect too. Like, you find this random key or this painting and you have to make sense of how they're related or whatever. But then the cutscene part was, one, pretty impressive, but like, that's part of the gameplay experience, is actually watching stuff. And there aren't a ton of games that I can recall where that's the case. But I'm actually a big fan of, and I thought you might like it too because of the story.
Yeah, you know that I like story. I'm a big fan of story. I like the story elements. I was wanting to find out why these three characters are here and what's going on at the manor, at the mansion. You know, mm-hmm. that's the big thing. They set up the story a little bit from the beginning, but you don't know why Edward's there. He just says he's an adventurer. And then you find this bishop. Like, why is there a bishop there? And you find these things throughout the story. And thankfully, I got well into disc two. So, I don't know, maybe halfway through. It's not the longest game. In fact, I think if you take out the random battles, a pretty short game. Gareth, how long does it take you to clear the game now?
I think the fastest I've done it was about 8.5 hours.
Oh, yeah.
That's so short for an
RPG.
That's
not a long game. And
not for an RPG.
Not for a four-disc game.
Right. Not for an RPG. Not for a four-disc game, but I think the majority of those discs are filled up with those cutscenes.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
And all of the dialogue, which I think we'll talk probably more about in our next section, but man, they filled this thing with dialogue, and this is early to do so. This is 1999, yeah. And so that's why, in my opinion, the graphics look like Final Fantasy VIII, but Final Fantasy VIII didn't have voice acting at all. Oh,
no.
I had to slow down there, but I think I'm correct.
Well, outside of like cutscenes, but even in those, it was like, you know, yeah. It wasn't like full on dialogue.
It wasn't like squall, nice gunblade.
Yeah.
So one other thing that's probably worth mentioning is the way the saves work around boss fights, because you can't actually get to a save point until you've beaten the boss. You can't save before the boss because the save point is after the boss.
That's not right or okay.
Brilliant game design. Right? One of the things though that I do appreciate is that every time you level up, your health and MP are back full.
I'm a big fan of that.
Most games do that, right? So it's not the most abnormal thing, but there are some games that don't, and that's always frustrating. And then you've got those fountains that are laying around, usually at a save point where they heal you completely too. So I would grind just a little bit there, but this isn't really a grindy game, but those boss battles, Gareth, if you don't know the mechanic or don't know what the enemy is weak to magic wise or whatever, like, you might lose a party member for sure.
Oh, without a doubt. Some, especially because if you get to disc three and disc four, the difficulty ramps up massively for the boss fights. Random battles are the same, but some of the boss fights get really hard because it becomes almost like a grudge match. So if you don't know exactly what you're doing, you are going to die, and then you're going to lose a lot of progress if you're not constantly going back to that save point.
Which, to some degree, and I know we all kind of laughed, you can't save until after the boss fight, but to some degree, for this being a horror sort of survivalist genre game, I could see some arguments for being like, these fights are going to make you learn this stuff, and it's going to be a little punishing and put you on end and make you feel like, well, I might not survive. I don't know. Maybe it was more thought out than we kind of scoffed at originally.
I'm still scoffing.
Aged. Nolan, you already mentioned it, but I just felt like everything takes so long to do.
I
want to know what you guys thought, along with Gareth. Gareth's played it before, he's more familiar with it. But I felt like the battles, walking around, and Kenny, you learned how to run, right? In the first play, I don't know if you did.
I don't know if I remember running. Oh. I remember this game feeling slow. I would imagine I didn't actually.
You for sure didn't. That's so good. But I just felt like everything did, because the way this game is set up, and like games of its time, Resident Evil, even Final Fantasy VIII, is you've got these pre-rendered backgrounds and you've got these camera sets. And so they're predetermined camera angles that your character walks into the set, and then they either go down to the end of the hall or to the next door or something. But I just felt like they were so tight on this one that it was having to switch often. Even in one room, it would switch depending on what corner you're entering into. And so that, along with the load screens into the battle, out of the battle, every move of the battle, attack and death of the enemy animation, all of that, sometimes the easiest battles might take 3 to 5 minutes rather than just quickly bursting through them.
Yeah, and I think that's a pretty big aging factor too. I agree with you. I felt it, and I almost wonder if that's why the game's so short, is because they were making time or allowing room for the slowness of the battle system. But it sounds like even outside of that, it's only an 8-hour game. So I don't know, like it kind of blows my mind that you can beat it in 12 to 15 hours casually. But yet it still felt so sluggish at times. Maybe if I spent more time with it, like if I had another week, I would get over it and become more efficient. But I definitely felt the slowness this week.
The one thing that helped that, and I felt the reality of pace to be an issue as well, but was that at least it wasn't long slogs of like just fighting random enemies. It's not like you were on an overworld and having to grind. It kind of had a nice tempo of give you a little bit of story, give you a little bit of sort of in-game animation character interactions, give you an occasional really well-made actual cutscene, go back and give you a couple of normal fights, give you a boss fight. Like the variety of the kinds of things you're doing at least cycle somewhat frequently. And so you're grabbing items and working on stuff. And yeah, even though like mechanically there were some things that were pretty slow about it, I felt like they varied what you were doing pretty consistently, and that helped that to me.
1999, Gareth here 20 years later. Woo, 20? Man.
The big 2-0.
Gareth, what do you think graphic, music, do you think they hold up to today?
Graphically, it's definitely aged. No matter how much I love this game, I can't deny that. Especially the in-game battles, like animations. When they're running around, it does look a bit jarring at first, but I think you get used to it quite quickly. Music wise, I still love it. I mean, I've got the soundtrack on my phone to listen to every now and then. I adore the music. Nice. I think he's done a brilliant job with it. I think.
And Hiroki he did the music too, right? Like he composed this, wrote the story, directed everything, right?
Yeah, he did. The only thing that he really didn't do was basically the programming.
Right. If there was one thing that I think had to be good here, it was music, since that's kind of what he has always done and then done after the fact.
Yeah.
And so it totally lives up on that front 100%.
And for the game, like you need the right musical, eerie feel. Like you've got to have that for the setting. You mentioned in the gameplay, but there's certain games where I think the location is a character itself.
Bioshock.
Like it is a part of the story. It's a character in the story. And in this game, where you're at and what's going on there is like the biggest mystery. One of my favorite things was that couple, that kind old couple that brings you in and feeds you, you know? They're so nice. And like how they evolve in the story and their role to play in all of this. I got as far as I could this week, and then I watched the rest of it on YouTube so that I could see the story because I was that fascinated with where we are going. And definitely graphics, music, all of that plays factors into this.
I'm glad you went and watched it because I was just sitting here wondering how much of the story you guys are actually seeing, because once you get to the third and fourth act, it goes crazy. And yeah, it gets so dark.
That's the payoff too, though, when you start to find out why they are there and who they're connected to and all of that. That's the payoff to the story. And really, I think that's what they're trying to do in this game. More than even gameplay, they're trying to... I think story was kind of first, and then everything else seemed that they were like, let's now create a game around this.
I mean, when you read about the development of this game, just the desire for it to be... sort of non-typical RPG and, ambient heavy and this whole horror thing. And then the amount of time they put into researching locations, the amount of time they put into motion capturing their actors for all of the cutscene elements, the amount of time they put into making things feel authentic with voiceover and actual voice acting, I think it totally shows that what they were thinking about wasn't just like, hey, let's make a game that's got some fun strategic RPG stuff, but it very much was a let's tell a story in this game that we're making.
About that, on the voice acting, that might be one of my favorite things about one of the positive things that have aged about this game is that I really respect when developers and designers go into that kind of detail by getting someone to voice the lines. It kind of brings the story to life, whereas normally I would make fun of it for being corny, and maybe voice acting can make it worse. We've also seen that. But here, honestly, I thought the conversations felt pretty natural for like a 1999 PS1 game. It felt like normal conversations. Sometimes it had some weird stuff, but I love the music and how it set the tone, and I think the voice acting maybe even more so.
Yeah, I think it really helped as well, because one thing that a lot of companies don't seem to do is, so obviously this was set in the UK, so what they actually did was they got a few UK voice actors to do the voice acting rather than getting, say, an American to do an English accent or someone from Japan to do an English accent. They actually came over here. They researched, Hiroki himself actually came to Aberystwyth, where it's set, which is this tiny little town island in Wales, which pretty much no one's ever heard of. And then they started looking around there and then moving over into England and seeing who they could find to do the voice acting. So I think it adds a bit of authenticity.
I love that. That's so awesome. I love that.
Yeah, and you can tell, that's the thing, and I agree, Nolan. Voice acting here, I think, does it even better than the music. Music's great. That's great. But the voice acting, here's the thing. 1999, that's not happening to the degree that it happened here. Like, this is a huge leap. I don't know if you guys know, but like 1999, people aren't doing these fully voice acted.
No.
And they're not just doing it for the cutscenes here. In fact, I don't even know if they're doing it in the cutscenes. You've got like cutscenes, fully rendered, animated, that kind of thing. And then you've got where the models,
like game,
the
character animation cutscenes,
animation, the character models are standing around, acting. You can't really, they don't have facial expressions or anything like that, but those are fully voice acted. And so there are I really do think that's why this game's on four discs, because it's not that long of a game. That's probably not what takes the majority of that. It's some of the cutscenes, but then I think it's a lot of the MP3s that they just had to load on there.
I think you're right. Yeah.
And it's not worth the best, dude. It's not. And it is cheesy. And sometimes it's like very, like you feel that. But again, it's 99. And so I think I would have been completely for it in 99. And I completely respect that even here in 2019.
Yeah, for sure. And to clarify, when you say cheesy, you mean more the dialogue than the voice acting, I think. Because I do,
but some of the voice acting is hit or miss here and there. But
that's
true. I mean, your three main characters, you've got it. But you've got the scary ghost girl that is in scary movies, right? That's like, come and play, or something like that. And so that's just what it is.
Wait, what are they like again?
Nope. Don't need that for a soundbite.
Fantastic. Final thoughts.
Gareth, you know that at the end of each and every one of our episodes, we typically determine whether or not a game gets our vote for New Game Plus status. But we want to start something new at the end of our guest episodes, and we want to turn it back to our guests and actually allow them to give a final pitch as to why our listeners should play the retro game of the week. In this case, it was Koudelka. Again, you could have chosen any game. You chose this 1999 PlayStation game, this weird tactical, scary horror RPG game called Koudelka. What is your few sentence, paragraph long, summarized pitch as to why people should find a copy of this game and play it?
I think the biggest draw for Koudelka has to be the storyline. It's so much darker than what you'd expect, especially as you get through it. The things that happen in that game are both horrific and also incredibly entertaining in a kind of sadistic manner. On top of that, while the gameplay does seem a bit slow, as you get into it and you level up, you get your new weapons, it does start to speed up and you start to learn tactics to make everything better. So the gameplay kind of improves, meaning you can get through the story better. The world building is incredible. As the game, if you want something that you've never seen or played before, Koudelka is exactly what you need to get hold of.
Boom. And that's it. That's why you should play Koudelka. Now, let me ask, it does start a series. I know you've been streaming some of another game in the series. How many games are there in the series? And does the series continue to be good to you? Does it even get better in certain regards?
So the obviously, it starts with Koudelka, and then you go into the Shadow Hearts games. And there's three Shadow Hearts games. While I love Final Fantasy, and I have so many of them, Shadow Hearts is my favorite series of all time.
Ooh.
It beats Final Fantasy without a shadow of a doubt.
Okay, all right, we get it.
Sorry.
Did Hiroki work on those as well?
He had a role in the first Shadow Hearts game, but by then he left the company.
Got it, okay.
Those games, also, they took, I think, a lot of inspiration from the likes of Legend of Dragoon, because rather than having a normal battle system, again, they have a much more active one in a similar way to like the additions from Legend of Dragoon, so it's kind of... They kept experimenting all the time through all of their games, and it shows how great that company was. And this was their first ever attempt, and I think they did a brilliant job with it as a very first game that they ever developed together.
Love it. Thank you for your thoughts on that, Gareth. We had a few of our listeners write in and give us their thoughts. Garlisle said, "Talk about a game I want to like. The anti-hero cast, dark themes, and historical fiction settings are already in full force. Unfortunately, though, they had lots of work to do on the gameplay. The first problem was just how visually dark the setting was, to the point of making navigation actively difficult, with important doors, paths, and items near invisible. Also, the PS1 RPG curse of slow gameplay and long animations is out in full force as well. While the Tactics Light gameplay tried to be novel, I don't feel it achieved much of note other than making you wait for units to shuffle around slowly. What really got me is how extremely few bosses get an actual story. Instead, most got text lines saying, 'Surprise, it's a boss,' and nothing else. Even parts of the final boss did this. It's really emphasized to me how secondary the gameplay was to this game. That said, you can also watch the game's story in about an hour and a half, and that's definitely the part that's great and will leave an impact."
Allow me to defend the dark setting. I think it's really important for this game, especially, and games like it, to have that dark setting, dark tone, visually hard to navigate. I know it's frustrating, but I do think it was intentional. And some of the stuff that's like, oh, I can't tell what that is or where I'm going, I think is a limitation to just like those kinds of graphics. Like I'm thinking like in some of the, not cutscenes, but just the gameplay scenes where the pixels are struggling like to show movement to someone. And it's like, it looks like the pixels are trying to jump out of your TV. But so I think it was a limitation, and I do like the darkness. So I'll just defend that.
And then Cecil said, "Koudelka was an absolutely fascinating experience. More than anything else, the game absolutely nailed its atmosphere. Between a fantastic soundtrack and a fully realized level design that works so well off of the cinematic camera angles appropriate to the survival horror experience. The main trio of central characters are wonderful to follow, thanks in part to some very solid voice acting. I dare say I enjoyed every second where I wasn't actually playing Kudelka, which is unfortunately where the problems begin and end. If it was as simple as director wanted to make a survival horror, the team wanted to make a JRPG, this is a prime example of the golden mean fallacy. Mm-hmm. Which we all know what that is, right?
What's that?
The equipment and stats and leveling systems are pretty basic and humdrum for a JRPG experience, but paradoxically, are you just using big words, Cecil? But paradoxically, overly complicated the deep for a survival horror, especially one that should only be 6 hours long. Doubled that for all the random encounters that spoil the atmosphere. If there's a bright spot you can give for Kudelka, it might be that it set the stage for a pretty decent JRPG in Shadow Hearts. Goes to show that not only are sequels always better, but so are spiritual successors.
I don't know what the golden mean is.
I gotta just say, I love that our community is adopting the truth of this statement.
But I do know what the golden rule is.
The golden mean fallacy.
I wouldn't send in big words for us to trip up on. I think he was trying to trick you there, Dustin.
Gareth, you did say, is Shadow Hearts a spiritual successor or a sequel? Or is the answer yes?
It's a yes answer. It's both, because it's a very different type of game. It's much more of a traditional JRPG. The whole series is just more traditional turn-based JRPG. But that it directly follows on from the story of Kudelka.
Is Kudelka in it to any degree?
To an extent, yes.
Spoilers.
Okay. Thank you for answering it in the way that you did. All right. Wonderful. Thank you guys for writing in. As always, you can send in your thoughts and your commentary on the Retro Game of the Week to ngppodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to include your thoughts as a part of the show. But for now, we're going to put aside Kudelka. Gareth, thank you for sharing it with us this week.
My pleasure.
And we are going to randomly select our next Retro Game of the Week, the final one before episode 200. Before we spin the randomizer, Kenny has a question to ask you, Gareth.
Okay.
So we like to ask all our guests if there is one game beyond the one that we just played on your behalf that you think needs to be on the Retro Master list. Maybe it's already there. Maybe it's not. Maybe you just want to give us a shout out. But something that we should add and look forward to playing beyond Kudelka, what game do we need to make sure is out there?
Oh, I would definitely go for DuckTales from the Lost Soul for the PlayStation 1.
Wait. DuckTales or Dark Souls? Those are two totally different kinds of games. What did you
say? Combine them.
DuckTales from the Lost Soul.
Okay, I'm so confused.
DuckTales from the Lost Soul.
Huey, Louie, and Dewey with swords in a monastery.
Just to warn you, it will mess with your mind.
Oh, no.
Okay,
I feel like we're seeing a theme here between Kudelka and Dad Blogger has a dark listens to metal side, and I like
his, one of his favorite musical artists is Marilyn Manson. So we're all getting the answers here. We do need to pray for 16-bit dad, but for now, we're going to set aside Kudelka. We're going to randomize for our next Retro Game of the Week. The game that we're going to be playing for the next 7 days, Zay.
I don't even know what you're about to say, but I hear the tone
twinkle
of your voice.
In your voice.
No, give it us a new game. Spin again.
It is by Iguana Entertainment.
Oh, well, I'm out.
Published by Acclaim for the Nintendo 64.
Okay.
I'm in.
Released in 1997.
I'm out.
It's an adaptation of a comic book series.
I'm in.
It's a first-person shooter video game called... Turok Dinosaur Hunter.
Boo. Just kidding.
Gareth, are you familiar with the game?
I am, yes. I had to play around a friend's house, though, because I never had an N64.
Nice. Will you play it with us this week?
Absolutely.
You promise? We're going to check up on you.
Oh, I promise.
Hey, this is a weird little fact, but I have this game, a physical copy. I don't know why, but I've never played it. I've never played it.
Here in the States, I think you can sell it for €1,000.
€1,000?
You quid. Well, hey, find a copy of Turok Dinosaur Hunter and play it along with us this week.
Join us in Discord this week. We have a great community and we want you to be a part of it. So go to ngppodcast.com and click join us in Discord. We'll see you there.
We want to say a big thank you to all of our supporters on patreon.com. You guys know who you are, but a specific shout out to our producer level supporters, Garlyle, Corey, Bill, Dear Baby, Grim, Maxima, Ben, Zach, Antonin, and Zion. You guys are wonderful. And of course, a super mega big thank you to Gareth for giving up some time. And we're in totally different time zones, so you're staying up late and sharing something you care about with us. And we're just so appreciative of you coming on the show today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yes, Gareth, where can our listeners find you online? I'm sure all of them already follow all of your stuff, but for the few that do not, where should they find you?
So you can find my blog at 16bitdad.com, find me on Twitch at 16bitdad, or on Twitter, 16bitdadblog.
You could also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Twitch at NGP Podcast, YouTube at New Game Plus Podcast. Listen directly on any podcast provider of your choice and make sure you subscribe so you are the first to get new NGP episodes. And while you're at it, leave a kind rating and review. This episode was edited and produced by our good friend Tom Tate, which the second edition or entry of his weekly, it's a new newsletter that he's sending via email. It's called Video Game Podcasts, and it's exactly that. Every single week, he highlights a different podcast that is related to video games. It's incredible content. If you are not yet subscribed, subscribe. What are you waiting for? You can find the link in our Discord or just pray and it will come your way. But it's really, really good stuff. Yeah, so we'll make the link visible on our Twitter and social media this week. Join us next week as we play Turok Dinosaur Hunter. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
I'm Kenny.
I'm Kuduka.
And that is Gareth, otherwise known as 16-Bit Dad. And this has been New Game Plus.